Well, we're into mid-September now. It means the NBA season is closing in, and we welcome you into another Sideline Guys podcast. Pat Boylan alongside Jeremiah Johnson. I know we have been trying to find ways during the off-season to keep this podcast going around schedule release time, free agency draft, of course, all the interesting aspects that have gone on with the Pacers off-season. But now we're looking at mid-September, and we've actually still a little bit away, still a few weeks away until this preseason starts, and we can really get some hard-hitting topics on this show. But we're at least starting to feel closer, don't you think?
Yeah, September is one of my favorite months just because it's sort of the calm before the storm, but I mean that storm in a positive direction. Of course, I love the temperature change a little bit, and I love football, but I really enjoy the anticipation for basketball season. And when it is mid-September, I think the players that had been out of town, they start trickling back towards Indianapolis, and you see more players around the building. The workouts are a little busier. You see maybe two-on-two turn into three-on-three, and maybe some four-on-four, five-on-five games, and you really start thinking about the schedule and how things are going to be in November. And I like it when you can start to really envision what the season is going to be like. And yes, mid-September, so we are less than 2 weeks away from Media Day and the start of training camp. Next week will be a busy one here in and around Bankers Life Fieldhouse with planning and meetings and basically setting up for what is the start to a 6 to 7 month journey. The first 2-3 weeks preseason and preseason games and training camp, and then the season starts a week earlier than normal. So yeah, it'll be here before you know it. I'm excited. I know you've been very busy in this past month as well, not just covering the conclusion of the Fever season, but a nice trip that you were able to take to Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yeah, that was really cool. I went with Greg Rappaport with Pacers.com over to Springfield to the Hall of Fame for George McGinnis's induction. And, you know, just the kind of the weekend, the pomp and circumstance, everything that surrounds this. And it was even more cool, I think, because if you're around here all the time and you're talking to, you know, our ABA legends that are still with us and you talk to Slick, the common theme as we've gotten more and more guys into the Hall of Fame has been, yeah, but we're missing George McGinnis. And we've known since, I think it was actually April 1st, the day that the Hall of Fame announced that George McGinnis was going in. We've known for a few months now that George McGinnis would be heading to the Hall of Fame. But to actually get to go over there and to see, you know, the Hall of Fame and to go to the presentation and see George's speech, it was one of the coolest things I've ever done here. And I think the thing that maybe stuck out the most to me, obviously, George was thrilled to be there, and I think he knows and everybody knows that it was a long time overdue, and talking to him was really, really cool. But almost seeing everybody around him, how electric guys like Slick Leonard and Darnell Hillman and Larry Bird and some of the crew, Reggie Miller, that the Pacers had on hand for him, I don't think I ever saw a smile leave Slick's face. In fact, we were talking to Slick at a different event at the Children's Museum just a couple of days ago, and it still seemed like he was glowing from that day, and Slick has championed for George for so long, and it just kind of feels like, you know, finally everything, the planets have all aligned in the correct way for all those ABA guys who were so deserving, George, Mel, Roger, Slick, and of course Reggie's in the Hall of Fame. And now when you look up at those banners and you look at the former players and the coaches, everybody that's up there from a player and a coach standpoint has Hall of Fame under their name as well. So the whole weekend was really cool. If you've never had a chance to head over there, obviously if you're a basketball fan, I think it's a bucket list kind of thing. And to be on there for a big part of Pacers history was pretty cool.
Once again, Pacers.com, and also this same podcast channel with some content from Springfield. And George is just one of the best people you could ever meet. If you ever happen to see him or run into him, go shake his hand, go talk to him, and you'll immediately understand why everyone that knows George McGinnis loves him. And we enjoyed over the last couple seasons during the Hickory Nights and different times having a chance, the decade celebrations, having a chance to have George McGinnis back and to recognize him. And I think during the course of this season, there will be another special time and an opportunity to, in front of the Pacer fans, one-time recognized the Hall of Famer George McGinnis, not just the Pacers legend. So great job by you and Greg there in Springfield, and now we look ahead to training camp, and most of our focus on these podcasts, Pat, is Pacer-centric. It's blue and gold chat. It's blue and gold discussion during the season. Obviously, we're on a lot more frequently with road trips and different things, but we thought maybe with so much discussion, I mean, the NBA is a 12-month sport right now. No one can argue that. Maybe August is the one month that slows down just a little bit. And in early August, that's when a lot of the projections were coming out of, okay, now the trades are finished. The free agent signings have been made, with the exception of maybe some end-of-the-roster players. You pretty much had an idea in early August of who would be where. We did not expect a big domino to fall like Kyrie Irving being traded,
yeah,
and then the two Eastern Conference finalists coming up with a deal. But we went back there, and I think you found a good article that we could base a little podcast around.
Yeah, Kevin Pelton with ESPN has an article of, they have these computer formulas, real plus minus. They plug in all of these different aspects, and essentially it spits out a win total that they're projecting for teams from the season. So, yeah, of course, in some ways, this is a very early time to do this exercise. Teams haven't hit training camp yet, but we know, I, as a fan, I always knew growing up the silly season, if you will, was sometimes just as much fun to project and to look at what could be. And yeah, we're still into mid-September, and teams haven't hit training camp yet, and we'll have some things that will change before we get to the season that might change these projections. But we're looking right now, and I have to make an addendum to point one here. We're going to do Eastern Conference, and we'll use ESPN's projected win total through the Kevin Pelton article, and then we will say whether we like them to be ahead or below that total, and just kind of give a bit of a conference outlook, a too early, if you will, conference outlook. This article was published on August the 3rd, which means it was before the Kyrie Irving trade to Boston. And even before that, they were projecting, ESPN, Boston to win the East again in the regular season at 49.4 wins. So I'll throw a wrench into this, and I'll say the Kyrie trade puts them, let's call it 51. What are you thinking about Boston leading the Eastern Conference, which, of course, they won the regular season last year? And I'll throw my altered win total for them projected at 51.
Well, my initial thought about Boston is maybe counter to what is a common opinion amongst basketball pundits and NBA gurus, in that I think Boston lost a lot from last year's team. Now, I think Danny Ainge probably looked at that team, and what has happened a lot in Brad Stevens' time in Boston is, you could say maybe the team overachieved just a little bit. But I think there's something to what they had in Boston in terms of playing with a chip on their shoulder, the toughness, the things that they were able to do defensively to frustrate teams. Look at the success a couple years ago and the way they've been able to play Golden State with those rugged, blue-collar type of players. And how often, how rare is it that someone can be a number one seed in a conference and have so much turnover? They'll have more turnover with their roster than the Pacers have with theirs. I believe it's down to five players from last year's roster of a number one seed in Eastern Conference finalists, and a couple of the ones who are back are maybe like definitely second team players. So you lose Jay Crowder, and the list goes on. Marcus Smart, to me, maybe is that one sort of toughness type of guy that embodied what Boston was. So I think it's going to be difficult for them to just immediately pick up where they left off and actually improve. So you look at last year, 53 wins. I think it's a good projection to be just under maybe what they were, but I think Danny Ainge is probably building for a team that can be better in the postseason and in a matchup against Cleveland, and if they could get to the finals, maybe could compete and maybe less concerned about regular season wins. So I'll go under the I guess the projection said 49.
It was 49 before Kyrie. I'm moving it to 51.
I'm going to say right at.
Right at 51? Okay, we're pushing right out of the gates. They're fascinating because I think you can make a case that they have two players on this year's team that were better than anybody that they had last year. But you're right, Jay Crowder was a huge piece to that. And I think I might be president of the non Boston branch of the Avery Bradley fan club. I think he's huge. I mean, he's as tough of a guard defender at that two spot that I think is in the entire NBA. And he's turned into a good enough shooter. He's tough-nosed. He's a scorer. Those are guys that are going to be really tough to replace. I don't think they're as deep as last year's team. But with Kyrie Irving, with Gordon Hayward, you know, added to Al Horford, I'm going to say just over the 51. I think they're going to win the East again, at least in the regular season. And I think they know that it's kind of like the Pacers a few years ago. They know that to beat LeBron James, they have to win the East and get that home court advantage to give themselves a chance, because going into a LeBron James team where you don't have home court advantage is extremely daunting and an almost impossible task. But if you win and you get, you know, that home court advantage, then maybe you start to think we could pull this off, and it allows you to drop one of those home games if you can steal a road game. So I'm going to go Boston just over the 51 adjusted projection. I'm going to put them maybe right at where they were last year, 53-54.
And they still have Brad Stevens, and yeah. I don't think that they will be sacrificing any games. They are not one of those teams that tends to rest players, and that can sometimes alter, I think, these projected win totals, is because you do not know at the start of the season how many games star players might rest. I think we'll see less resting this season. Number two on the list was the second seed last year, the Cleveland Cavaliers. 51 wins a year ago. They actually tied Toronto. If you think back to last season, some things you forget about when you just are focused on what happened during the postseason. Cleveland and Toronto both finished tied with 51 wins. This projection has Cleveland at 49.2, and that did include Kyrie Irving. I don't know whether the projection changed significantly, but I believe it could project them a little lower if they take into account games that Isaiah Thomas will miss.
Yeah, and so they're projecting 49.2 on ESPN, maybe drop it to 48. But this is tough, because if Thomas is going to miss a lot of time, we know each year in, year out, they try to use LeBron James a little bit less in the regular season and make sure he's fresh and not putting too much weight on him so he is ready for the playoffs. Cavalier teams that haven't had LeBron James on the floor have been terrible, at least post second round of LeBron, if you will. And as good of a player as Kevin Love is, I don't think you want him as your number one option. All that said, I'm going to go just over, because I think that they understand that they've got to at least have a position where they're not in the fourth or the fifth spot. And with Washington there to potentially push them, Toronto there to potentially push them, I think that's going to keep Cleveland honest, and I think it's going to make them have to play LeBron James enough. And I think the Jay Crowder addition, I think Kevin Love playing a little bit more whenever Isaiah Thomas comes back, it's still a LeBron James-led team, and 50 wins means 50-32. So does a LeBron James team lose 32 or more times? I understand the reasons you would go under. I'm going to say just over.
And if you have a strong feeling that Cleveland finishes under, if the number's 48, let's say, what the actual projected win total is, then you're creeping that much closer to the 500 mark. And you say, is Cleveland really only a 500 team? Right. So I'm going to say just a shade under. But my thinking would be this. I think they will be significantly under pace in that first half of the season. I think they will maybe not be one of those teams that will come out of the gates on fire, and I think it'll take them a little bit. But I think that they will understand it'll be important to be playing well at the right time. They did not do that last season. They did not enter the playoffs with any kind of momentum and still were able to advance to the finals. But I still felt like during that run, even though they were winning games, there was some doubt because of how they finished. I think they'll be about a 500 team maybe up until around Christmas, and then they'll be a 70%, maybe 65% win percentage maybe in that second half of the season. I'll go a shade under on Cleveland, also knowing that they understand if they're the second seed or the third seed, they can still come out of the East with that kind of seeding.
This next one, I think, might be the toughest for me to determine. The Washington Wizards, they have third at 47.5 wins. This is a team that is largely the same as last year's. They have the potential to, you know, have a more healthy Jan Mahinmi, but They won 49 games last year. It was a big jump for them on the previous year. I'm struggling with this one a little bit because they're pretty much the same team. Otto Porter another year. Perhaps he gets better. They had to pay him, and so essentially it was just their payroll that went up. But it's a similar team that won 49 games a year ago. 47.5. I'll say over to 48. I think they're about the same team that they were last year. Upper 40s wins and a team that's going to win a playoff series and then be that kind of team that's really dangerous in the second round, and you have to be on top of your game. If it's a Cleveland-Washington matchup in the second round, let's say, I think Cleveland's certainly the favorite, but Washington has that firepower with John Wall, with Bradley Beal, that you can't take them lightly, and if you're not on top of your game, you could get upset by a team like that, and we almost saw that last year in the playoffs with Washington. So I think they're about the same team on paper. I think they're about the same team. I'll give them 48 wins right now.
This one, I think, maybe going to go out on a weak limb right here. I'm going to say Washington is either the first or second seed in the East when all is said and done. I think either Boston or Cleveland, maybe both, they might have some bumpy road at times this season. And I think Washington, I'm a big believer in continuity, especially if you're a successful team. And I think second year with Scott Brooks, and you think about, they're a little bit like Miami last year in that you could take maybe the first 2 months away from their record and then look at a snapshot of maybe for Washington, they got it together maybe a little quicker than Miami even did. But you look at maybe the final 60% of their regular season, and they had, you know, they had one of the best records and one of the best teams really in the entire NBA. So I think as long as their stars can stay healthy, I like the mood around that team. When you're in Washington or you're at a shoot around or a practice or after practice, I just think there's a good vibe with Scott Brooks and with everyone should be happy on that team. Everyone pretty much has gotten paid. John Wall, after maybe some deliberation in the summer of whether he was going to sign that max extension, it seems like his roots are firmly established in Washington, and maybe they're even a team that has a chance to maybe, like they had with Bogdanovich, picking up someone near the deadline, but maybe they acquire someone, or maybe they're a destination for a waiver or a signing in the middle of the season. So I think Washington is going to be on a mission early this season, and I'm going to go over. I'm going to say even maybe 52 or 53 wins for the Wizards this season.
I think the argument for that as well would be the fact that if you're Washington, if you're Boston, you know, we'll see if you're Toronto, if Milwaukee's in that conversation. I think you see an opportunity with Cleveland where they're not as strong right out of the gates as they have been the last couple of years. So maybe, you know, if we pour everything into the beginning part of the regular season, we could maybe create a little bit of a buffer and try to get over Cleveland, because again, realistically, the only chance of beating Cleveland in the playoffs is having that home court advantage. And yeah, maybe you could see, you know, Washington seeing that as a realistic target now where they didn't previously. ESPN has fourth being the Milwaukee Bucks at 46.9 wins, so call it 47. I'm gonna go under here. Love Giannis. I still think there's not a ton around him. And, you know, even with the Bucks, who were kind of a darling team last year, they went 42-40. So this would be at 47, if you'll call it, 5 wins ahead of that. And I really, really like Giannis, but you also have to remember there's going to be an off season where all coaches will have to watch tape on him. And my one yeah but with him is the fact that he hasn't shown that he can consistently knock down a long two or a three-pointer. And I remember there being times last year where I was frustrated that Paul George would be up in his grill around the three-point line and he was blowing by him. And it's like, man, just let him shoot the three. He shoots it around under 30%. And that's something that he's going to have to improve if he wants to be in that MVP discussion. And I think teams, you know, are going to dare him and really slack off of him, like you play a Russell Westbrook. And so I still think that Milwaukee needs to get better pieces around him before we're talking about them being a top four team in the East. And right now, they like them projected as fourth. So I'm going to go under at 47 wins on the Bucks.
I will agree with you, Pat. I will go under on the Bucks. Once again, they were 42-40 last season. They are basically one loss to Miami or Chicago away from missing the playoffs entirely, and that season is viewed as a major disappointment. Now, they dealt with a number of injuries, and it seems like they've had to deal with injuries quite frequently in the last two or three seasons. I'll be interested to see what they're able to get out of Jabari Parker this season, and and with Chris Middleton as well. If they are all healthy with that young, you know, starting five or maybe seven, top seven players, you'd put that for the next 10 years up against anybody in terms of the potential that they have if everyone stays in Milwaukee and if everyone is healthy. But I just have my doubts. Sometimes when guys get hurt, it just tends to happen again. And Pelton notes in his write-up of Milwaukee at projected 46.9 wins, he says Milwaukee is the youngest rotation of any projected playoff team. The Lakers and Suns, teams that have a lower average age. So with that, to me, I think experience is important to have success in the NBA. So that youth, they still, even though they've gotten some playoff experience, you know, I still am going to say maybe lacking some seasoning. Maybe I also don't credit Jason Kidd as much as I would maybe for somebody like Brad Stevens, or even I kind of like Scott Brooks a little bit more. So I'll go under on Milwaukee and say maybe they are more likely to be fighting for 7 or 8 this season in the East.
The fifth projected team on ESPN is the Charlotte Hornets. This is a team where I think you could give them like a 12-game swing and nothing would really surprise on that. 2 years ago, they had a really nice season. Last year, they struggled to 36-46, but there's a couple of ifs in that, and Pelton notes this. First of all, they were 36-46, but they outscored their opponents just barely by 0.2 points per game. He's arguing, the analytics would argue, that that would regress to the mean at about 41 wins over the course of a season. You also count in the fact that, I didn't realize this, they were 3-17 in the 20 games without Cody Zeller last year. And they added Dwight Howard. So all of those three
things.
That's
crazy. Yeah. I'm going to file that one away for a pregame show.
Yeah.
Although we don't play Charlotte for a while this season, so it may not be extremely relevant. But that is a credit to Cody.
It's a wild stat. Adding Dwight Howard, I think, was a slight bonus to where he was in Atlanta last year to that team. So there's a lot of things in that case that say you're looking at the up on Charlotte. Pelton projects them at 44.1 wins. I'm still going to go under. You know, I like Kemba Walker a lot, but I don't know if I like him as in that top tier, even that second tier of players. And, you know, Howard brings within it an obstacle of trying to figure out how to play around him in a different style. And Charlotte's a team that in years past has been spread the floor, a lot of movement. You know, it opens up the lanes for a Kemba Walker. And they're going to have to figure that out with Dwight Howard, how to do all that with a player like him. So I'm going to go under on 44 wins on Charlotte.
I think I'll go under as well, but I think they're a fascinating team to watch early in this season because they have a lot of continuity as well. They have an outstanding head coach. I really respect Steve Clifford. And so you would think they have to be better than the way they finished last year. Now, they were 36-46, and projecting them at 44, are they 8 wins better than what they were last year? And is Dwight Howard that big of an addition, a positive addition? I'm going to say under, and I still think Charlotte, 8 or 9 seed, might be what they are this season, and I think that would be a disappointment to everyone in Charlotte. But you can't say up on everyone. I feel like so far I've been saying under quite a bit more than I've been saying over. So maybe that some of the teams coming up, I'll be a little higher on, and I'll just go to number 6 right now and say I'm high on or higher than the projection states for the Toronto Raptors. To say they're 6th. They haven't. It's been a long time since they were down in that 6, 7, 8 range of the Eastern Conference. It feels like Cleveland, Toronto, now Boston, the last couple of years have been the class of the East for the last few years, and I do not see enough reasons from what happened this offseason for that to change. So I will say over on the 43.4.
I'll say way over. I don't understand. You know, these are computer projections, and typically I think you looked at these other projections so far. I've said, yeah, you know, I could kind of see that. I think Milwaukee's a little too high. But Toronto, the Toronto last year won 51 games. They won more than that the previous year. If a team stays healthy with Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, and Serge Ibaka, there's absolutely no reason they win 43 games. That would be a massive underachievement if that trio and everything that's around Toronto only won 43 games. I'll say way over. I think Toronto, again, is looking at a home playoff series. I think the biggest problem with Toronto is they're just kind of stuck. They're in a scenario where they're good enough to have a first-round home playoff series. We saw them a couple of years ago get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but not even remotely challenge LeBron. They haven't been able to challenge Cleveland when they've had a chance to play them. And they're kind of stuck in that ground where they've got, you know, 2, 3 really good players, maybe no stars, definitely no superstars. You could argue no stars, depending on where you draw that line. But there's a lot of teams that also wish they were where Toronto is, which I think is well over 43 wins.
Just to reiterate, these numbers and these projections are they're numerical based. They're formulas and plugging in stats. And Kevin Pelton comes up with an interesting reason for Toronto's lower projection, and it's the loss of Patrick Patterson. And, you know, we watch every game over the course of the season, and I did not view that as an earth-shattering loss to the Raptors this past offseason, and maybe that's something to keep in the back of your mind when you're watching the Thunder this upcoming season, as Patrick Patterson is gone to OKC, is if he's that much of a difference maker and maybe does some of the behind-the-scenes type of things that can help Oklahoma City. But we are both over on Toronto, and I am over as well on the Miami Heat. I heard some podcasts in the summer about you cannot usually translate teams that have amazing second halves and say they automatically pick up where they left off and say over the next season the projection most likely is what they had for a season record the year before is what they would have in the upcoming season. However, Miami was a team that no one wanted to play last year. And Miami missed the playoffs, lost the tiebreaker to the Chicago Bulls. But I don't think Boston or Cleveland, either one of them, wanted any part of Miami. You could say they didn't want any part of Indiana because of, you know, Paul George and what he was able to do in a playoff series. But from the entire team, with what Miami had and what they showed in the final, you know, 3 months of the season, I think they were much better than the ninth best team in the Eastern Conference. I think they were maybe playing like a 4-5 type of team, and maybe that's the seed they would have earned if they could have not had that dip in November and December. So I'm going to say projected 42.3. That's a 47-win type of team, a 5 or 6 seed maybe this season.
I have no idea with them. If they're the second half team throughout the whole year, they win 60 games, and if they're the first half team throughout the whole year, they win 22 games. If they're the second half team was the best team in the East, and the first half team was maybe the worst team in the East, and I think they probably fall somewhere in the middle. I think they're about a 500 team. They're gonna list them at 42.3. I don't think anything would shock me with them. If what happens,
you disagree, then we've been agreeing, even though we didn't compare notes.
I think 1 and 2 we disagreed on, and I think 3 through 6 we agreed. I'm gonna say under for Miami.
Okay.
I'm gonna say I like Dragic, I like Whiteside. They've got, you know, Johnson and Waiters, and I like those guys. But I'm gonna say, you know, they fall back to about mid-pack. I'm going to put them at a 41-win team, so I'm going to say slightly under the 42.
So this would be a question. If you say under 42, then that's going to be 41, which would be what they finished last year. Do you think in the East this year 41 makes the playoffs?
Yes. I think it does.
So 41 and 41, but in instead of out.
Yeah. 41 and 41 and
in. I think
in.
Most people would agree with you.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, Pelton extremely agrees with that, because if you look at his next team, the Detroit Pistons, he has them as the final team in. His formula has them as the final team in at 35 wins. That would be stunning if 35 gets you in. But I think you could make a case that there's a significant drop-off after 7. And he has Detroit at 35.1 wins. I'm going over on this just because 35 is so low. What did they do last year? Detroit last year was 37. And they did lose Marcus Morris. They got Avery Bradley. They lost Caldwell Pope. I don't know what all that equals out to be. For me, that's kind of a push. Pelton argues it's a slight downgrade. I'm going to say over 35 wins. I think also one thing we have to take into account is, at least on paper, the East has gotten worse and the West has gotten better. So just from a who you're playing night in and night out standpoint, you might have a slightly easier strength of schedule. And I'll say Detroit hits 38 wins this year and is over.
I'm going to choose to hope that there is not the significant drop-off from the top 7 to the bottom 8, depending on who is where in the top 7 and bottom 8. I'm going to say that of the teams we've not yet talked about, 2 or 3 of those are significantly better than their projections, and that there is a fight for the playoffs, and that much like last year when you had really with about a month left in the season, I know on Fox Sports Indiana, we were still showing, do we show the top 11? Do we show the top 12? Maybe not that many teams are going to be still in the mix in March, but I'm going to say at least 10 have a shot. And if that's the case, then you would not think your 8th seed. Although, if the 8th seed falls down to 35, then the entire East might still also be
show the whole
fighting for the playoffs.
Yeah.
But with that said, Detroit's not one of the teams I'm extremely high on. I like Avery Bradley a lot, like you. but I don't think there's enough there. I think there's a lot of uncertainty. I'm also not a big fan of Reggie Jackson. I did not know whether they were better or worse with him injured last season. I think Morris is a loss for them. I think he was a toughness type of guy. Caldwell Pope would have some games where he was phenomenal and some games where he was didn't even remember him being on the floor. That said, I'm going to go under on Detroit and think maybe it all falls apart and maybe they just make wholesale changes maybe sooner rather than later. So let's go under on 35 for Detroit.
So you're saying that there's not going to be the drop-off that this would suggest. It's just not
with
Detroit that's going to be in that
Some of the teams
spot.
Coming up here maybe will be a little higher.
It's funny because I agree with you. I'm not very high on Detroit, but at 35 wins, I think they likely do better than that. And I'm kind of on the team, like, let's hold off on Philadelphia because it's everybody's sexy pick, but we've not seen them win 30 games in a long time. They're projected at ninth at 33.2. But with all that said, they won 28 last year. Who knows what – I'm just going to kind of throw Joel Embiid aside, and I'm going to say let's say he plays about the same amount of games next year as he did last year, which I think is just over half. And let's just say that that's what he is. Even if that's what he is, they didn't have Ben Simmons at all. They didn't have Markelle Fultz at all. Now, there will be some rookie learning curves, sure. But he's an upgrade on, you know, TJ McConnell and what they have been doing at point guard. Ben Simmons, assuming he plays, should be an upgrade somewhere. Amir Johnson and J.J. Redick should be veterans that help with that group. So I'm going to go over on 33 wins on Philly.
I will agree with you. I hope I don't contradict myself as this podcast continues as I look at the teams remaining on the sheet and try to say, well, who's really closer to 41 or 42? But I think Philadelphia is closer to that. I don't think they're a 500 team, but I'm going to say a high 30s team and a team based on the Eastern Conference projections that could be fighting for a playoff spot. I think I've seen other projections saying they are a 42-win team. I think it'd be very tough to have any confidence that this team that has yet to do that, you know, is relying on basically point guard play from one or two guys who've never done it in the NBA. I mean, that's not a recipe for success, whether, you know, Markelle Fultz is given the reins or whether you've got Ben Simmons playing some point guard or point forward or however you determine Ben Simmons plays in the league. To have those guys sort of leading your team, TJ McConnell, I think, becomes very, very important. And I'm going to say 38 or 9, so over, but I'm not going to go quite saying start the playoff parade for Philadelphia.
All right, we're getting close to where they have Indiana. Number 10, 0.2 wins on the projection ahead of the Pacers is the Orlando Magic. And I'm going to go under. I could see, you know, I really like Frank Vogel, and I think he's a good coach, and I think he was the right hire, you know, a good hire for Orlando. The problem is, you know, it's funny, talked to Slick a couple of days ago and asked him, you know, was talking to him about George McGinnis, and he was talking about how it was the first time an NBA frontline has all made the Hall of Fame. And I said, well, that's got to lead to a pretty proud coach. And he kind of paused and he goes, yeah, but you know what? Once you can coach at the NBA level, it's much less about coaching. He goes, and you got to have the Hossies. And I'm not sure that Orlando has the Hossies. You know, Elfrid Payton has kind of looked so-so. Jonathan Isaac is a high-ceiling guy that they drafted, but I'm not sure he's ready to contribute at any significant level here in their first year. They lost Serge Ibaka in what was kind of a disastrous total all-around move, trading for him and then just getting pieces for him back within the same offseason. Aaron Gordon's a decent player, but I think a better dunk contest candidate than an NBA player. Not to, you know, degrade his skills. He's a solid player. Vucevic struggles on the defensive end, is a good offensive player. I don't know. I could see this falling apart for Orlando. I'm going under.
Yeah, I'm not sure there are too many teams that you think about, what did they do this summer? And I couldn't remember, so I just had to type in Magic roster just to refresh my memory of who they've gotten, how it differs from where they were last season. And Shelvin Mack's now a member of the Orlando Magic, so I'm going to give them an extra couple of wins just by the acquisition of the
Maurice
Bulldog.
Spates, I think, is a solid move. So
Jonathan Simmons, to me, may be the from San Antonio.
Yeah.
May be the biggest difference maker. But the thing that I have when I think about Orlando is they were just a team that it just for as positive as Frank Vogel is, it was just a frustrating group. There was a sense of frustration around that team when we saw them at times last season. And I think there were maybe people that wanted to really just refresh and start over. but they've got new front office leadership right now, so maybe they want to evaluate a little bit what they have. I want to say over 32 just because of Frank Vogel, and I also think that they are a candidate at some point, maybe early in the season, to make a move. Maybe they improve their roster just a little bit once everyone, the new front office, has seen what they have. I'll go over 32, but I don't think they're a playoff team.
They went 29-53 last year. All right, here we go. We're to Indiana now. They project them at 11th with 32 wins. That actually ties with where they have the Knicks at 12th with 32 wins. And again, with this projection, the Pacers are 3 wins out of 8th. They're 0.2 wins out of 10th. They're about a win out of 9th. So, Pelton's saying they're going to have plenty of chances to be in contention for a playoff spot. 32 wins. We don't need to run through the offseason. I think everybody knows the offseason. I'm going to go over. I think putting the ball in Miles Turner's hands more often is going to be a good thing. I think Victor Oladipo has seen a drop in his stock, and that's only because he was next to the guy who touched the ball more than any other player in the league. I think Sabonis turns into a good second-year pro. Maybe you could say the same thing in Indiana that you'd say for Orlando, is their best player good enough to win the amount of games you want to? We don't know. Is that Miles Turner? Is that Oladipo this season? Is it maybe even Lance? But I think one thing the Pacers have is a lot of depth of really solid players. Lance Stevenson, Darren Collison, Victor Oladipo, Miles Turner, Domantas Sabonis, Bojan Bogdanovic, Glenn Robinson III. I mean, you could actually make a case that they have a really tough decision to make on who the starting lineup should be because they have so much good depth. And I think in a league like the Eastern Conference is going to be, where the talent has apparently come down, it's going to be a lot of grinded out games with these teams from, like 6th to 12th or 13th. Having depth is a positive in that scenario, so I'm going over on the 32.
There have been years the team has tried to upgrade its bench, and there's been a lot of talk in the offseason that the bench is going to be better, and then it does not come to fruition. This is one of those years where I definitely think, and we can say that, and if we're wrong in December or January, you come find Pat and I, and I'll give you my 2 tickets to the game against Brooklyn. But the bench will be better. I just think that your depth assessment is spot on. Don't even know if you referenced Corey Joseph.
I didn't.
The toughness that he brings.
I named 8 guys and didn't name Corey Joseph. That's an argument right there. So.
And guys that have won before and experience. This wasn't just rebuild and start over and get a bunch of young guys. It was get some young, talented guys and then supplement that with some winners. And so you don't put a roster together like the Pacers did and project yourself to be a 30-win team. I think that they can be better. I do think there's a lot of pressure on Miles Turner, and I, like you, Pat, I'm curious how you respond to this in the last month now, since you pretty much know who's going to be on the team and what you're going to have on opening night, how you respond when fans ask, well, how do you think they're going to be? Because I think that's the common question. How are they going to be? The preseason games are going to be worth watching and paying attention to just because there is so much uncertainty. And one of the things I say first is that I think there's a lot of pressure on Miles Turner, but I think it's a good thing, and I think he will play sort of relaxed and without the pressure he had. So maybe more pressure on Miles, but he will play like he doesn't have that pressure. He doesn't have to impress Paul George so much. And the Pacers have 2 guys that I think everyone maybe underselling just a little bit. They probably have a number on their roster, you could say. But both Victor Oladipo and Miles Turner, I think, are much better than maybe what some of the analysts and some of the media members and even the fans think of them. And so both will enter the season maybe a little bit something to prove, a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And I think the stats will bear out by the middle of the season. People will understand, yeah, those 2 guys are pretty good. You may still need a big threes. You may still need another piece or two, but those are pretty good foundation pieces. And I'll say over on the Pacers. I haven't signed my new contract yet either, so not like I'm going to say under.
On the subject of ranking players, Oladipo went down 30 spots. Why? Because he played next to Westbrook. This is the rankings. I don't even know which ranking I'm looking at. So many places have come out with them. One of them, Miller Time Podcast was pointing out, had Miles Turner right around Trevor Booker and Marcin Gortat. And I think you ask any guy, even on a 1-year basis, any GM, any coach of those 3, which one do you want? I think that option is pretty clear. And I think we both like the Pacers over here. And you know what? We both talked about a lot of guys, and We didn't even mention Thad Young. I mean, that's how deep the team is. So it's missing, you know, I think a Paul George level of player for this season. But it'll be interesting to see. I think the depth is better than it's been in a long time, too, and how those two counterbalance each other. Pacers we like on the over at 32. Let's go to the Knicks now, also at 32 at 12th. Is it weird that I kind of like the Knicks in this scenario? Carmelo Anthony, I look at, you know, from the Knicks are probably kind of the opposite of the Pacers from the aspect of, I don't know if we're still going to put Carmelo Anthony in the star range, but you've got Carmelo Anthony and Kristaps Porzingis, and those are two good players to have on a team that's projected 12th and for 32 wins in what's likely to be a down conference. So I'm going to go Knicks, and they have well, we'll see how Frank. We need to get a pronunciation on this. Nilikina, their draft pick out of France.
You've
I
got
think.
Some time. No one's judging you on your
Nilikina, Tilikina.
Their first round draft pick, yeah. Frank.
A top 10 pick, so theoretically he could play a significant role. I like the Knicks on the over.
The exact same thing that you said. I can't believe I'm going to say this. I will say I like the Knicks over as well. And when you think about last season, you think, oh, that was, you know, kind of a blah, awful Knicks season. They won 31 games. They beat the Pacers three times. So maybe my judgment and my impressions of the Knicks, I may be thinking they're a little better than they really are. For their sake, I think the Carmelo Anthony situation, it just needs to resolve itself before the season starts. Really, I would say the next week and a half before training camp starts, because I just don't understand how there is still a player that, while he says maybe the right things, they don't want him there. So what is right. How is he supposed to really embrace New York any more than he has? And if you have said, and maybe Phil Jackson's not there anymore, but I don't get the sense the new leadership has really wrapped their arms around him either.
No.
You've done him no favors. Just let him go play somewhere else, and I think your entire team will play better without having him on the floor. I think that situation does resolve itself. I don't say over 32 just because of I'm expecting a great haul in return. But if Porzingis stays healthy, and I think Hornacek is an underrated coach, I think he's better than some are giving him credit for right now. You let him try to coach this team up.
Not in the triangle.
They're a 35 or 6 win team.
All right, so we're agreeing there. Three teams left, and the Brooklyn Nets are not projected last. They're projected 13th at 29.5 wins, and I'm going to say under. They won 20
last
year.
Big under on the Nets.
Big under. They won 20 games last year, and I will say I do like what they're doing. I do like their direction, considering they're completely handcuffed with another leg tied behind the other on what they're trying to do without having draft picks. They've gained D'Angelo Russell. They've gained Damari Carroll. They just made a move recently that's spacing me off the top of my head right now.
Tyler Zeller.
Move. Yes, Tyler Zeller. Good call. I like those moves, but you got to remember they've also lost Brooke Lopez in all of this as well. And I just can't see a team, Brooklyn, that won 20 games with Brooke Lopez as their best player last year, losing Brooke Lopez and then winning 10 more games, which is what it would take to pick the over on them. So I'm going – I think they're right around where they were last year. I think they're around a 20-win team. But I like where Brooklyn is right now better than I did a year ago. I'm just not sure I'm ready to say that that matters in 2017-18.
I was thinking about Brooklyn, and you have totally convinced me I'm on your side on this one. And the more I hear you talk, the more I agree. There's no question. You know, there is always hype around certain teams, and we reference the hype around the 76ers, and I think there's just this assumption that, you know, and maybe the hype and the discussion even comes from the fact that it's this draft pick that someone else is going to benefit from, that it gets more people interested in how the Nets actually fare. And I think that's the biggest travesty right now, is that they do not reap any of the rewards from these seasons.
And they still aren't going to. They got another year of this.
Right. So that's where you could say they have nothing to gain by losing, and maybe they, unlike the Bulls or the Hawks, teams we have yet to discuss, you know, they want to win in March. There's no reason for them to rest players, even though they did rest players last year late in the season. Brooke Lopez and a number of others in a game that mattered, I think it was to Boston, or Boston would have been for a higher seed. Maybe it was for against the Bulls or the Heat. They rested players. So I'm going to say under 29.5. I agree with you. Brooke Lopez was a reason they were competitive in a lot of games, and while I like Tyler Zeller, I don't think that's a good switch Under on the Nets, I'm with you. And I think 14 or 15 is their seed.
All right, Chicago Bulls is who ESPN has at 14, 28.5 wins. You look at some projections, they've got the Bulls significantly lower than this. You know, I think that Butler trade to me was a travesty. And I know a couple Bulls fans who feel the same way. Unlike the Paul George situation, they didn't have to trade Jimmy Butler. They had 2 years on his contract. It's tough to get Jimmy Butler's. Maybe Jimmy Butler's not a top 10 player, but he's really, really good. And I don't understand why they had such acceleration on trying to move him when at least, you know, maybe there's things that we don't know, but at least to, you know, the close basketball observer, it didn't appear like he necessarily was dying to jump or anything or didn't like Chicago. And I know they had underachieved the last couple of years with him, but I don't, when you look at this trade to me, if you offer me, and again, maybe I'm biased here because I really like Miles Turner and I've liked him when he was at Texas all the way up. So I'm biased on him. But if you said to me, we're going to offer you Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and the 8th pick for Miles Turner, I would go, I don't know. I don't know if I'd do that. That's Miles Turner, a player I really like and a player I think is going to be a really solid NBA pro, an all-star NBA pro.
Who was an 11th pick. He was the, you know.
Yeah. Would I do that for Turner, who's not yet on the same stage that Butler is on? I don't like the trade at all. I think that was a mistake for Chicago. At 28.5 wins, I'm going under. I think there's somewhere around 25 or 26. Markkanen might be a good player, but I don't think he's the kind of guy that's ready right now. LaVine's coming off an ACL. And Chris Dunn showed, while he has a lot of potential, had a poor first season. So I don't think any of those guys are ready to contribute at anywhere near the level that they would need to be to win games. So I actually think the Bulls could finish last in the East.
Yeah, I think the range for Chicago is anywhere between 18 and maybe 31.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I think about, there are so many things that go into a season. You think about the mayor, Coach Hoiberg. He has a lot to prove, and so now he has to show this season a number of people that he is capable of being the coach for the future. So he has no incentive to be bad, because if they are bad, I think at the end of this season, maybe that's what the front office wants, is another good draft pick or a good draft pick, and then they would still start over with a new coach. So I'll be interested to see how he responds to the challenge of having a roster that's a little bit depleted. And I also will be interested to see what happens with Dwayne Wade. You know, Chicago's a place that no matter if they're winning or losing, and they've been respectable, and we haven't seen, like, down Chicago recently. But the United Center is one of the, if not the largest arena in the NBA, and it's always, you know, near capacity. And maybe Dwayne Wade's around till December and the crowds are still decent. The people want to see Dwayne Wade in a Bulls uniform, the hometown kid who's, you know, a star basically. But I don't see Dwayne Wade being on that team very long into 2018. And I think the writing will be on the wall for that season. I'm going to say they're the 14 seed. I guess I'm going to go under, but I do think they're going to be scrappy, and they're not going to be an easy win at all times.
You bring up a couple of good points, I think, both with Brooklyn and Chicago, which is that Brooklyn has no incentive to lose. In fact, they would probably rather, you know, win and not see that pick look so bad or good, depending on how you view it. Chicago, as you mentioned, Fred Hoiberg could be coaching for his job. So he's in the opposite situation. Over the last couple of years, they felt like they've had a decent amount of talent and it hasn't come to fruition. This year, there isn't a lot of talent, but maybe he could show that he can get more out of that group and keep his job. So that could be a couple of areas where Chicago and Brooklyn may exceed expectations based on that. I'll give you Atlanta to close here. 27 wins. You know, they've rolled the dice. This is, you know, maybe the argument why you don't try to hold on to Paul George and see if you can sign him, because they've rolled the dice with Millsap and Horford the last 2 years. It's blown up on them. 27 wins, though, for a team that won 43 a year ago.
I don't see any way that this isn't the trust the process team of the season. I mean, this is a team that I can't imagine Atlanta is doing anything other than trying to get a star out of next year's draft. And I think that they have made a few changes in terms of the front office, with in terms of, you know, coaches and front office does front office work. And I think, but that said, the coaching staff is not in any danger right now of losing their job. So yeah, the trade with Dwight Howard wasn't it Dwight Howard for like Miles Plumlee?
Yeah.
Now you can say what you want about Dwight Howard, but that almost says right there, you're trying to get worse, not get better. And nothing that they did in the off season is like, oh, that's going to really make that team a lot better. Fans in Atlanta have seen, don't they have the longest playoff streak in the Eastern Conference?
Which is
maybe
surprising.
Even in the entire NBA.
Yeah.
They're due to have one of those seasons, and they are not going to be a team that tries to lose for the next 3 or 4 years. But for 1 year, given the fact that they just don't have the horses right now, under on the Hawks. And okay, so they say 27 projected wins. Let's look at last year's standings. The Suns won 24, the Lakers won 26, the Nets won 20. Those were the only teams under 27. So you can still win 27 and be bad, but I'm saying more like 17.
Yeah, I so badly wanted to disagree with you here because it's a down Eastern Conference. There's a lot of, you know, they're going to play the Chicagos, the Brooklyns, the Orlandos.
You think Bulls 15, you think the Bulls will have a worse season than Atlanta? Or you said Nets? I mean, it's tough, these bottom
three. I don't know. I think I don't like all of them. I don't know. I'll go, ugh. Yeah, you talked me into Atlanta.
I was yes.
You talked. I was gonna say Chicago last, but you talked me into it because I think Chicago and Brooklyn have things to play for.
Bazemore and Schroeder. I mean, those are your stars.
There's Dedmon. There's Ilyasova. I think your reason to play thing has changed my view a little bit because Hoiberg definitely has a reason, you know, to have those guys ready. Brooklyn has a reason to not be in the bottom, and you're right. Atlanta has every reason to try to be trust the process. So. Yeah, I'm going with you. I think they're right around 27 though. I don't think they're 17. I think they're 25, 26, 27. I think there's, you know, Schroeder's still there. I think there is some talent. I think the East, the Orlandos, the Chicagos, the Brooklyns, that's a lot of teams to play a lot of times, you know. Is Atlanta significantly worse than a Detroit, you know? They could give the Pacers problems. There's not a lot of teams in the East where you say Atlanta's definitely got no chance night in and night out, which hasn't always been the case with the East. So I'll say 26 wins, slightly under. Atlanta's the worst team in the Eastern Conference. You sold me on it.
And once again, shout out to Kevin Pelton for giving us some ammunition for how we could fill a September podcast, and I think that the numbers, it's interesting to see how the numbers project things, but like you said, the rankings, I mean, how many different NBA ranking lists are out right now? And I think it is interesting, teams, players, bulletin board material, everyone can say that they, you know, oh, they're going to try to prove the doubters wrong and the skeptics wrong, and it can be a little bit of a tired question and a cliche type of storyline. But I do think that there are a number of teams in the East that enter this season with something to prove because of just, you know, I think deservedly so. Everyone's talked about how good the West is. We won't go through the West. Maybe if this podcast is well-received, we can do a similar exercise with the Western Conference. But thought we could make some good content out of the East one and hope you enjoyed what we had to say.
Agree. So again, it's too early. We'll have, I'm sure, injuries, and you mentioned there's a Dwayne Wade trade that could happen. There's a Carmelo Anthony trade that could happen. So this is a little bit too early projection of the Eastern Conference, but it's always fun to go through these exercises and bide time. We're getting close to media day, and we'll have some content on Pacers.com. A lot of content coming up through Pacers.com, social media. I know your TV crew will be working hard on that day as well, as will radio. So it's That's a week from next Monday, so about a week and a half from media day and getting to see all the guys in their uniform in the new training facility will add a little bit of a nice change into things.
Yeah, we've got the same coaching staff, and I enjoyed working with a lot of those guys, but we have a number of new faces, new players, new people to talk to, new uniforms, practice facility, a lot to look forward to, and I think an early training camp, early preseason focus might be on this team, especially locally, just to see who are these guys and how are they going to come together. And I'm really interested to see what team will take the floor and what kind of vibe will surround them on opening night when the Pacers play the Brooklyn Nets.
There you go.
the worst matchup for a team that, you know, maybe needs to get off to a good start.
Right out of the gates. All right, so Media Day, that coverage will come up about a week and a half. Make sure to stay on Pacers.com, on Twitter. We'll hopefully get a sideline guys out in the near future. Also, it's too late to apply for the Lance Stephenson, Miles Turner fan zones, but we will have that final contest coming up on Monday.
But keep your eye on Pacers.com, where Pat Boylan will do his best Bob Barker impersonation.
You can't see this because it's a podcast, but I'm actually testing out our Bob Barker mic right now. So that's a little tease for Monday. If you're a part of that, we'll look forward to seeing you there.
I just took a picture of you with that microphone.
All right. That can be, by the way.
If you make it to this point in the podcast, tweet at us and say, send me that picture, and then a prize for the first person that actually tweets at me asking for the picture of Pat with the Bob Barker microphone.
And by the way, we have been put on notice that we need to get a picture of you and me on Media Day, so when we post these podcasts, we actually have us on them. It's a novel concept, but improving year two to year one.
Baby steps. Yeah, baby steps.
All right, Jeremiah, we'll see you on Media Day, and look forward to one of these coming soon.
Thank you, Pat.